You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It is the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It is Wednesday, February 7th. 2018. I've got an important show for you lined up. I'll tell you what. This perhaps might be the most important show I've done, and most certainly the most information show I believe I'm about to provide to you. I'm going to get into some. I'm going to be getting into areas where others have yet to go. And perhaps refuse to go. I'm going to lay out some information that connects significant dots with current events to the past. For example, yesterday's lesser redacted Grassley letter was released. And that was the subject of a number of the conservative talk shows. And if you watch them, boy, I'll tell you, if your head didn't explode by watching them, I don't know. It was confusing. It was just not just repetitive, but confusing. It's just crazy. But here's what I'm going to lay out for you. I'm going to provide you with information in this episode. So please listen to this entire episode. And you might even want to take some notes on this. But I'm going to be connecting dots that extend from the current day, the Grassley letter, all the way back to the Clinton administration, the Bill Clinton administration. Also, the people in the orbit of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And something called the Third Way. Okay, now remember that. The Third Way, Bill and Hillary Clinton moving forward to the Clinton email crimes, Benghazi, Obama's eligibility, connecting all of those dots in this program. And it's important because, I had to read through my notes five or six different times leading up to today's episode. For the past 5 hours, I've been doing nothing but research and checking and double-checking these facts. So I'm going to lay it out for you right now, all right? The foundation and then the deep dive. So grab your coffee, grab a notepad and a pen, and please listen right through the end of the program because I'll tie it up for you as best I can. And by the way, I believe I will live up to what I just described. If I disappoint, I want to hear about it. Send me an email if you are disappointed from what you hear in terms of my promises for this explosive information. First of all, let's work backwards. Because, again, this is critical for everyone to understand. The Grassley letter. Now, let's turn just briefly to Sean Hannity last night, who, in a Twitter message, or actually both on Twitter as well as this show, and I'm not going to be playing any audio segments, okay, but released or warned Comey. That's James Comey, and Christopher Steele. Call your lawyers immediately, all right? Fox News, Sean Hannity, basically red-fired FBI Director James Comey his Miranda rights after the FISA memo was released. Now, this past Tuesday, Hannity gave both Steele and Comey some advice. Call your lawyers, all right? let's stop or let's put that out in the open. From the memo that was released last week. Now, there's a second memo or a second letter, and this was authored by Senator Grassley of the Senate Judiciary Committee and Lindsey Graham. This is what the current hoopla is about. And initially, the letter was released on Monday. This essentially a criminal referral slash inquiry, and it was heavily redacted. You may recall, if you watched any of the media, people holding the letter up, and it was just like 95% blacked out. Well, many of those redactions were lifted. All right. Now, what this reveals, the information here is extremely important. And many more of these will come out. For example, you saw, or we saw together, the release of the what's known as the FISA memo, the Nunes memo. All right, we saw that released. Now we're seeing, and that was on the House side. Now we're seeing the Senate side, Grassley and Graham releasing their. I don't want to say indictment, but this letter, memorandum, whatever, that suggests the State Department under Obama was involved, and I'm really summarizing this because I've got other avenues to dig deep into, but what could be summarized as their complicity in creating this false Russian narrative against Donald Trump. Essentially a coup attempt against our nation, and specifically targeting Donald Trump and anyone within his circle of friends or associates, I should say. All right. So this is what is taking place, and there will be many more revelations subsequent to all of this. These are incremental, deliberately incremental revelations, in my view. But what this is exposing is the vast criminal network that has existed in government for the past well over 25 years, going back at the very minimum now, going back to the Bill Clinton presidency. So I'm going to be naming some names. In fact, I'll name them right now and then tie these names together. Obviously, Bill and Hillary Clinton. Sidney Blumenthal, otherwise known as Sid Vicious. Cody Shearer, you might have heard that name. I'll explain, just don't worry about it right now. Jonathan Winner, W-I-N-E-R, Jonathan Winner. And of course, Christopher Steele. Victoria Nuland, John Kerry. Strobe Talbot. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. All right. Oh, well, James Clapper. Got to toss him into the mix as well. So let me just run down the names again. All right. Obviously, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Sid Blumenthal, Cody Shearer, Christopher Steele, Jonathan Winner, Victoria Nuland. And of course, you have James Clapper, John Brennan, Barack Obama. All right. Now, let me work again. Work from the most recent backwards. Because it's important to understand what is taking place. All right. As we have seen, the memo, the first memo, the FISA memo, We saw that revealed a coup against our nation. The memo released, and the second memo, or the letter from Grassley and Graham on the Senate side, now implicating Department of State involvement in this coup attempt. What we're seeing is the walls close in around Hillary Clinton, as well as Obama. All right. Just to be clear with respect to the first memo, the progressives on the left, the people on the left, and the media spent their time lying to you and I about the contents of the memo. First, they said the release would jeopardize our national security, could contain classified information, and releasing it obviously would expose sources and methods. Obviously, they were lying. Then when the memo came out, they changed their excuse to saying, well, there's nothing, it's nothing at all. So you can't have it both ways. Just a few points on that initial memo. You've got Senator Cory Booker, who said that releasing the memo was treasonous and it endangered fellow Americans in the intelligence community. Now, the only two sources, in terms of sources and methods, in the initial memo, Christopher Steele, who was funded by Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign, and a news article from Yahoo News. Both were sources that were used to obtain a FISA warrant against Carter Page. Now, the Yahoo News story came from Michael Isikoff, the reporter, who knew about, by the way, who knew about Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky, but never reported on it. All right. Now, with the release of this memo, the initial memo, there were no vital intelligence sources compromised. All right. We have been lied to about the memo by the progressive left. I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way. Now we're entering into what is kind of phase two, if you will, or the Senate initiative via Grassley and Graham. Now, regardless of what you think of either one, and especially Graham, just put that aside for a moment. Let's focus on the information. The information in this latest disclosure, this memo, this letter from Grassley, the lesser redacted version that came out yesterday, is extremely telling. Okay? It strikes at the heart and strikes at the heart of Clinton and Obama, but strikes at the heart of the coup, the attempted coup to take down Donald Trump and our nation. What this unredacted or lesser redacted Grassley memo or letter is doing is exposing State Department involvement. It is connecting, it's actually exposing the fact that Steele, Christopher Steele, who we know as the MI6 spy, Steele was passing information in addition to everyone else who he was giving information to, the FBI. We knew that from before and the Hillary campaign. He was also passing information to the Department of State. And the Department of State was giving information to the FBI. And the FBI was using that information as the foundational basis for a FISA warrant. All right, the people involved in this include Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State under Obama, who was, by the way, the Chief of Staff to Strobe Talbot. You heard the name Cody Shearer. Cody Shearer is Strobe Talbot's brother-in-law. And who is Strobe Talbot? Strobe Talbot was Bill Clinton's Deputy Secretary of State during the Clinton administration. Very somewhat complex road map there, but I think I laid that out pretty well. So you've got Christopher Steele passing information to the Department of State. You've got the Department of State passing information to the FBI. And the FBI taking that information and using it as a foundational basis to secure a surveillance warrant against Donald Trump associates, including and specifically Carter Page. Involved in the process is Victoria Nuland, the assistant Secretary of State, who is the chief of staff, by the way, to Strobe Talbott. And Strobe Talbott, his brother-in-law is Cody Shearer. But who is Strobe Talbott? Bill Clinton's deputy Secretary of State during the Clinton administration. Benghazi comes into play because Victoria Nuland etched out the talking points for the Benghazi attack back in 2012, when the attack on Benghazi took place. Cody Shearer is the brother, or Cody Shearer is an associate of a guy by the name of Sid Blumenthal, also known as Sid Vicious. Now I'm going to toss in a company name here. Osprey Global Initiative. All right. So Osprey Global Initiative is a company very active and profited by the war, allegedly now, in Libya. And one of the advisors to Osprey Global Solutions is none other than Sid Blumenthal. And Sid Blumenthal is a very close confidant of Hillary Clinton. Now, you see how deep this gets. Now, Sid Blumenthal is also an individual who, a promoter of something called the Third Way. Now, I went slow enough where you were able to kind of at least get a mental picture here of the players and of the flowchart that this second Senate Judiciary Committee letter kind of lays out. Actually, there's more of an implication than anything else. And this information I just gave you is deep and far deeper than anything you're going to hear on any of the channels. And this is why it's so critically important, because it goes all the way back into the Clinton administration back in the 1990s. And it has connections right through the present day. And in between, it has connections to the Clinton email crimes, as well as Benghazi, and connections to the controversy behind the eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama. Is your head about ready to explode yet? We need a bigger boat. We need a bigger flowchart. All right. The best way I found to talk about this is to talk about the primary player that you're going to be hearing a lot about, and that is in the coming days, and that is Sid Blumenthal. I want to start with Sid Blumenthal because he's been around a while, and when you have the complete background of Blumenthal, you'll understand the other connections. Of course, he's from Chicago. He attended, and I'm giving you this background because it's important. Let's go right to, he was born in Chicago back in November 6, 1948. He attended Boston's Brandeis University from 65 to 69. During his time in Massachusetts, he became a liberal political activist. Yeah, no surprise there. In 1968, Sid Blumenthal traveled to Chicago to participate in the famous protest at the DNC. You remember that, okay? Now, at his graduation ceremony back in 1969, Blumenthal was one of the students who displayed a stenciled red fist on his gown as a symbol of protest against the Vietnam War. But, oh, it was much more than that. And again, this background is important. Now, also during his years in college, he worked for some time as a guard at the Boston Public Library. And there, from there, he took jobs at alternative publications called Boston After Dark, Boston Phoenix, and the Real Paper. Now, in the 1970s, Blumenthal contributed to the radical left magazines, plural, such as The Nation, The Progressive. And at the toward the end of the 1970s, he became the Boston correspondent for In These Times. And that was a socialist newspaper published by the Institute for Policy Studies. All right. Now, he was profiled in a 2016 article in Vanity Fair. Blumenthal also became involved with a group of young political activists, including Ralph Whitehead, who was a professor at the University of Massachusetts, who had worked in and around the new consulting firms and had produced an 85-page white paper called The Permanent Campaign. Now, they argued that conservatives were on the march, creating alternative institutions that were well-funded and collaborative. That phrase, permanent campaign, has come to refer to the way campaigning never stops, even when a party has come to power. But the more fundamental point of the white paper was that progressives needed to be mindful of how conservatives were operating, often unnoticed and out of sight. That's important. Blumenthal had long been thinking along the same lines as Whitehead. In 1982, Blumenthal published a book called The Permanent Campaign. In 81, going back a little bit, he served as an advisor to former Massachusetts Governor Dukakis, a Democrat. In the early 80s, Blumenthal began writing for the New York Times, the New Republic, the latter, by the way, who had hired him to cover the presidential election of 1984. During that campaign season, Blumenthal gave a great deal of positive coverage to Gary Hart, a Democrat U.S. Senator from Colorado. By the way, Blumenthal, while a journalist, also helped Hart write his campaign speeches. Now, Blumenthal in 1986 wrote a book called The Rise of the Counter-Establishment. He focused on an event that is among the most startling and profound in modern American politics, namely, this according to Blumenthal, namely, the rise of a conservative elite that had created a counter-establishment to counteract the progressive left or the liberals, or as they were known at that time. Now, the progressive left, or as I would just call them, communists. I just want to very quickly go over this in a review of Blumenthal's book. A scholar named Joshua, let's see, Muravchik, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, described it as 369 relentless pages of unrelieved sarcasm, ridicule, conspiracy theories, crackpot psychology, and invective. For example, this Blumenthal's book, and this is important so we understand what's taking place today. Just want to remind you of this. In his book, Blumenthal depicted neoconservatives, as he called them, as sufferers from multiple forms of alienation, who have adopted pro-American positions because, and I quote, by casting a warm glow around places they believed to be at the center of national life, which they were never part of, they gained a vicarious sense of belonging. He charged that neoconservative writer Bill Kristol had secured a teaching position in Harvard's Department of Education in exchange for the support of his father. Irving Kristol had previously given to President Reagan's appointment of Bill Bennett as Secretary of Education. So some allegations there that feed into the progressive narrative. He claimed that a desire for vengeance against the 1960s counterculture had led some neoconservatives to feel a measure of vindication when John Lennon was killed. He also took on Reagan, Ronald Reagan, at the time, and in his book. He stated that Ronald Reagan's ability to present the system of conservatism as a mythological system, insulated it from most criticism, even though his policies, meaning Reagan's, might be contradictory and counterproductive. This, according to Blumenthal. And he was a fan of socialism, of course. Now, it was also during the 80s that Blumenthal first came to know Bill and Hillary Clinton. And he went to develop a very close and permanent friendship. His initial encounter with the Clintons took place at a Renaissance weekend retreat, where various leaders in the field of business and finance and such, government, media, and so on, would meet to discuss a number of matters with public policy implications, a think tank. Again, I'm talking about Sidney Blumenthal. This is important. This background is critical. Okay, when Bill Clinton ran for U.S. president in 92, Blumenthal just praised Clinton as this transformative figure who had the potential to bring just a major change, fundamental change to America. Does that sound familiar? Okay. After Clinton was elected in 1992, Blumenthal became the Washington correspondent for The New Yorker. Now, a number of his peers in the media claimed that his close relationship with the Clintons rendered him unable to write objectively. Journalists, for example, Andrew Sullivan, described Blumenthal as the most pro-Clinton writer on the planet. Now, I just want to remind everyone here listening, remember the emails that were released by WikiLeaks. Remember Sidney Blumenthal and his relationship with Hillary Clinton. Remember Obama saying, you can't have Sid Blumenthal come on board with you at the State Department. Just keep that in the back of your mind as I'm going through this information. By the way, the Whitewater real estate controversy, the White House travel office, he was providing just absolutely cover for the Clintons. All right. Remember the allegations by Arkansas state troopers that the Clintons that the state troopers had arranged a tryst for Bill Clinton, including a tryst with a woman later identified as Paula Jones. Okay, that information came via an American Spectator article by David Brock. At the time, Brock was this right-wing attack dog. Now, Blumenthal's New Yorker reporting never, if ever, rarely mentioned Clinton's behavior. This is how the media was molded back then and continues through today. Important foundational information you're not going to hear elsewhere. Blumenthal derided the mainstream media for turning itself into a yellow press, dealing in sexual innuendo and invading the privacy of politicians to try to get at it. This is an excuse to cover for Bill Clinton. Now, he was rewarded mightily by Hillary and Bill later on, as I'll tell you. But in 1997, Blumenthal was hired as a special assistant and advisor to Bill Clinton himself, the president, a post that he would hold until the end of the Clinton administration. And in this role, he was responsible for writing major speeches, for crafting foreign policy, and researching news stories that were pertinent to the White House. Now, more importantly, Blumenthal was tasked with smearing and defaming Clinton's political opponents. His job was to smear and defame Clinton's political opponents. And thus, he was named Sid Vicious. He did it with such tenacity, he earned the nickname Sid Vicious. So you'll hear that reference, Sid Vicious. This is how he got that nickname. One example, in 1998, Blumenthal was widely believed to have been responsible for leaking information to the media about an extramarital affair that House Judiciary Committee Chairman Henry Hyde had been involved back in the 1960s. At the time this charge was made public, Hyde was preparing to preside over congressional hearings that would determine whether President Clinton should be impeached for his transgressions, including perjury and obstruction of justice and abuse of power and such. Of course, that was all related to Monica Lewinsky. Blumenthal, for his part, released a statement saying that he was not the source or in any way involved with the story on Henry Hyde. So he denied everything. Now, this is where it gets really even more pertinent to today. In February of 1998, Ken Starr, the special prosecutor who was assigned to investigate the facts behind Clinton's behavior of the Lewinsky case, he subpoenaed Blumenthal to testify before a federal grand jury on three separate occasions. Now, in addition to that, Blumenthal was deposed by the Senate when it tried Clinton on impeachment charges back in January of 99. Right after one of his February 1998 appearances before the grand jury, Blumenthal went to the courthouse steps, and he made this theatrical denunciation of Judge Starr, Ken Starr's, of his tactics, saying that he could hardly believe such an undignified invasion of people's private lives was occurring here in the United States, claiming that the grand jury had asked him to reveal details about his past communications with at least eight separate news organizations. Again, this is critical. Blumenthal declared, "I have never imagined that in America I would be hauled before a federal grand jury and forced to answer questions about my conversations as part of my job." Now, a number of months later, when the transcript of that grand jury session became public, and I've got the book, actually, of the, I've got the transcripts, personally, me, of the impeachment report. It showed that Blumenthal, in fact, had not been asked not one question about his communications with any news organizations. Please think about what's taking place today and how all of what we're hearing is being molded. This is so critical. Now, Michael Isikoff, you know that name from Yahoo News, and Isikoff printing the story about the Steele dossier. Isikoff, Yahoo News, currently being a source for the Steele dossier. Now, back then, as an investigative journalist, Michael Isikoff wrote in Slate, at slate.com, that it was Blumenthal, not the prosecutors, who brought up the names of the news organizations, apparently so he could later claim that the questioning was more sinister than it really was. Interesting how these traps are laid. Anyway, the late author and journalist Christopher Hitchens observed that Blumenthal's disingenuous claims had served their purpose in that they successfully bought Clinton some time with the press and added to the standard character, the cartoon-like, you know, behavior or perception of Starr as this some type of tyrannical monster. Notice how Sid Blumenthal is managing the optics. Again, you're not going to hear this deep dive anywhere else, but it's so critical to understanding what's taking place today. Now, in a subsequent grand jury hearing, the forewoman of the grand jury told Blumenthal, and I quote, "We are very concerned about the fact that during your last visit," and there was an inaccurate representation of the events that happened, were retold on the steps of the courthouse. Even the foreperson of the grand jury was concerned. Now, by this time, Blumenthal's reputation as a very unprincipled just an unprincipled person was established. The name Sid Vicious columnist Jonah Goldberg said that Blumenthal did what he did and said what he said because that's just what kind of guy he is. He likes saying bad things about people, period. If you snapped them open like a pea pod, nothing but black ooze would come out. This is not me saying this now. This is columnist Jonah Goldberg, all right? And even Isikoff wrote that Blumenthal rearranges facts, spins conspiracy theories, impugns motives, and so on. You get the picture now. Now, again, this is critical. After his grand jury, Blumenthal consistently characterized Judge Starr as a prosecutor on a mad mission from God, a constitutional illiterate, and a key player in a vast right-wing conspiracy. Whoa, where have we heard that before? Hillary Clinton. That's right. And by the same token, he depicted Clinton as the victim. Get this. Bill Clinton was the victim of a predatory and sexually demanding young woman. And subsequent, a Republican sexual inquisition. Foundational information. Now, politically, Blumenthal, like Bill and Hillary Clinton, professed to be a proponent of the so-called Third Way Movement. Here it is, folks. Third Way Movement. This is so important. In fact, go ahead and write that down. If you're listening to this and you're driving, don't pull off to the side of the road. Third Way Movement. Okay? Now, during his tenure as a Clinton staffer, Blumenthal helped organize several Third Way conferences. Also known as the Radical Middle. You might ask what the Third Way is. The Third Way is a nominally centrist philosophy that, according to Third Way social democratic theorist Anthony Giddens, it embraces a conception, an idea of socialism that emphasizes the need for large social welfare apparatus, greater economic widespread assistance, and a rejection of capitalism, period. It almost but does not, again, almost but does not endorse the traditional Marxist call for the total elimination of free markets. We are talking, the third way we're talking basically is socialism. It's a familiar term. The third way is a familiar term from the lexicon of the left wing of the progressives, who have this long and dishonorable pedigree in the catastrophes created by messianic socialists in the 20th century. In the 1930s, Nazis used the Third Way to characterize their own brand of national socialism as this equidistant between the internationalist socialism of the Soviet Union at that time and the capitalism of the West. The third way. This is socialism. Okay? Now, following his tenure in the Clinton administration, Blumenthal wrote The Clinton Wars, which was a 2003 memoir of his White House experiences. And specifically, it's a book about the political and media battles that occupied his attention throughout his scandal-plagued second term. In his book, and this is critically important, Blumenthal took every pain to build up Hillary Clinton's political bona fides. This is where her political aspirations for president, this is Sid Blumenthal. Remember, when the WikiLeaks leaked the emails, the Clinton emails, you saw and heard Sid Blumenthal. This is why. This is who Sid Vicious is. For example, he affirmed Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Clinton's claim made in the middle of her 2000 U.S. Senate campaign in New York that she was a longtime Yankee baseball fan. That he also provided this benign description of Hillary Clinton as a first lady, her supposedly dignified and philosophical acceptance of the need for a special counsel with respect to the Lewinsky scandal, even though people like Stephanopoulos and Dick Morris both recall Hillary's obstinate refusal and ranting against the appointment. And he also affirmed that Hillary Clinton was the author of the 1996 book It Takes a Village, despite the fact that her ghostwriter was paid $120,000 for the project. And he also, Blumenthal also gave Hillary some much undeserved credit for advancing the Irish peace process, saying that her work, it was her that made it all possible. Again, this is Sid Blumenthal creating the optics. Think about the optics here. He appeared in numerous media venues to promote his Clinton wars. He repeatedly said that the politics of personal destruction, remember that phrase, that demonic conservatives were allegedly using to smear the reputations of innocent Democrats, innocent progressives. He said this was taking place. This was rampant. He was creating the narrative. He was managing the narrative and also managing the optics. All right. By the way, in 2007, Blumenthal served as the executive producer of a documentary called Taxi to the Dark Side. And that addressed the enhanced interrogation, just as an aside. Now, from 07 to 08, Blumenthal served as an advisor for Hillary Clinton's presidential primary campaign against Obama. Pay attention now, because this is where it gets really interesting. Obama won, of course. And this is where the animus between Clinton and Obama originated. You might ask why Obama objected to Blumenthal's presence during her tenure as Secretary of State. It's because it was Hillary, well, more precisely, Blumenthal, who created the narrative that Obama was born in Kenya. And in fact, it was Blumenthal who promoted the rumor that a highly inflammatory whitey videotape existed of either Barack or Michelle Obama referring to white people as whitey, something that, well, had the tape ever materialized, would clearly have been toxic to Obama, but it never came about. And again, remember, it was in 2016. Blumenthal, his name made headlines again when it was reported that he may have had a hand in promoting the rumor that Obama was born in Kenya and thus ineligible for the U.S. presidency. Who does this all benefit? Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton. It was on September 16th of 2016 when McClatchy tweeted out that Blumenthal had told me in person. In fact, this was McClatchy, Washington Bureau Chief James Asher, tweeted out that Blumenthal had told me in person that Obama's birthplace was Kenya. And during the 2008 campaign, or the Democratic primary, Blumenthal visited the Washington Bureau of McClatchy. And during that meeting, according to Asher, during that meeting, Blumenthal met with Asher in his office and strongly urged the McClatchy Bureau to investigate the exact place of Obama's birth, which he said was Kenya. As a matter of fact, McClatchy, actually, they assigned a reporter to go to Kenya, and what the reporter determined was the allegation was false. At the time, Blumenthal, of course, there really hadn't been too many articles with respect in the mainstream about that, but anyway. Now, while Mr. Blumenthal here in this case offered no concrete proof of Obama's Kenyan birth, Asher stated that He said, I felt that as journalists, we had a responsibility to determine whether or not those rumors were true, and that's why he justified the trip to Kenya and so on. And the rest is kind of history, in a sense. All right? Now, it was in September 16th, 2016, to be precise. Former CIA analyst and Clinton loyalist, Larry Johnson, you know him, he said that he was shocked at the audacity of Hillary Clinton to decry Donald Trump as a birther, because her campaign was the one that published the and started the rumors. But more precisely, it was Sid Blumenthal. So you have Sid Blumenthal, this massively rabid socialist, in fact, Marxist, promoting this opposition research back in the Clinton administration and running all the way to the present. The background I gave you is so important, because you're not going to hear this deep background on any of the media when they talk about Sid Blumenthal. And believe me, his name will be coming up more and more and more. Now I'm going to connect the dots further here. It was January of 2009, after Obama was inaugurated the first time. Hillary Clinton was appointed and approved as Secretary of State. She turned to Obama and said, hey, Barack, I want to bring Blumenthal in with me. In fact, she wanted to offer a State Department job to Sid Blumenthal. Obama just didn't say no. He said, hell no. All right. In fact, a Vanity Fair report stated that Obama would not allow it. Key White House staffers had grown to detest Blumenthal. Two of them threatened to quit if Blumenthal was hired. They believed that he had been involved in spreading, of course, the allegations of about Obama during the 2008 Democratic primary. All right. As I just mentioned. So, now, listen to this. Having been denied an official position in the new administration or at the State Department, Blumenthal was subsequently hired by the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. And what was his job there? Oh, to conduct research. To create optics, message guidance, they called it, and planning events. He was an event planner. Meanwhile, he also worked as a paid consultant to Media Matters for America and American Bridge 21st Century. You want to know about those two organizations? Ask Andrew Kerr. The young man who we've had on the Hagman Report. These are Media Matters for America, American Bridge, pro-Clinton organizations that were established by the progressive David Brock. Think about Brock's position. Just consider Brock's the optics surrounding Brock and Elefantis, for example. And I'm going to stop there, because if I go down that road, it's going to be a long and bumpy road. I don't want to do that. Now, consider, let's fast forward to Libya. And after Muammar Gaddafi had been driven from power in August of 2011, Blumenthal served as an advisor to a group of business associates who, according to the New York Times, were seeking, and I'm quoting from the Times now, to get in on the ground floor of the new post-Gaddafi Libyan economy. Specifically, they had hoped to persuade the Libyan transnational government to award them lucrative contracts for the construction of floating hospitals to treat the war wounded. Hey, war's a great business, right? The temporary housing for houses that were blown up, schools and such, in order for those projects to move ahead, that would require approval, not just from Libyan authorities, but also from the United States State Department. It was in May 2015, it was learned that during the 2011-2012 time period, both before and after the October 2011 of Gaddafi's death, Blumenthal had sent at least 25 memos about events that were unfolding in Libya to a private, secret, non-government email account belonging to who? That's right, Hillary Clinton. Hence the WikiLeaks Clinton emails. But the emails showed, obviously, that Hillary Clinton was relying heavily on the advice of Sid Blumenthal. In 2016, Blumenthal published A Self-Made Man, the first installment of a four-volume biography on Abraham Lincoln. All right, let's stop right there for a second. I think you've got enough background now on Sid Blumenthal, perhaps too much. Folks, I had to give you that background because in order to understand the strange case of this Russian dossier that in the new dossier, this second Russian dossier, which was turned over to the FBI, according to The Guardian, that dossier was compiled by Cody Shearer. The Guardian identifies Shearer as a controversial political activist and former journalist who was close to the Clinton White House in the 1990s. Well, that's putting it quite mildly. Shearer was, in fact, he's been long linked to the sleaziest aspects of the Clinton operation, mainly through his close relationship with Sidney Blumenthal. Roads are leading not only to Clinton, but to Blumenthal. And longtime observers of the Clinton ecosystem know that anytime Cody Shearer appears, Sid Blumenthal, well, he's not far behind. You're going to be hearing Blumenthal and Cody Shearer more and more and more. You've got to understand that there's really no sunlight between the two, no space between the two. By the way, Blumenthal was so offensive to Obama, I failed to note this. He was actually banned from the White House, according to reports. Now, however, Judicial Watch had pointed out that Blumenthal was a constant presence by Hillary Clinton's side during her State Department years. Now, Blumenthal and Shearer, they're connected to a global network of intelligence and military freelancers. Think Benghazi. Think Libya. Okay, they were involved in meddling in Libyan affairs after Gaddafi was removed from power and the cackling Hillary Clinton said, "We came, we saw, he died." It was Blumenthal and Shearer who provided intelligence information to Hillary Clinton in the weeks leading up to Benghazi. And they were involved in pitching deals to make money off of the war in Libya. You can see reports from ProPublica and others on Blumenthal and Shearer's Libyan efforts. Now, according to Judicial Watch, during Hillary's time at the State Department, Blumenthal also promoted African business deals and meddled in European Union elections. As for Cody Shearer, got a long history of dirty tricks. He's been linked to Whitewater era efforts to dirty up Bill Clinton's critics, to shake down politicians, the people involved in a number of things, and to fronting for Bosnian Serb butcher Radovan Karadzic. Now, more recently, The Guardian reports that the new Shearer document makes some of the same allegations about Donald Trump as the original Christopher Steele dossier, including lewd acts, the PP dossier, in a five-star hotel in Moscow. It notes that Steele passed on the Shearer report to the FBI in October of 2016. Consider what I'm saying here. Cody Shearer, Sid Blumenthal, Department of State connected to passing along this opposition research bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton. Consider the background, extensive background I gave you on Sid Blumenthal. Consider what I explained about the progressive Marxist left third way. That's the ideology of Hillary Clinton, of Sid Blumenthal, and the people around him. Consider Blumenthal's insurer. Again, you're going to be hearing about these people. Their involvement with people like Victoria Nuland and John Kerry, who were getting information from Christopher Steele. Again, you've got Steele passing information to the Department of State, to Victoria Nuland under the Kerry Department of State. The Department of State is giving information to the FBI, and the FBI is taking that information and using it as the foundation for the FISA warrant. Now you're opening up a different avenue here as I'm coming close to the end of the program. You've got Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State. She was the Chief of Staff to Strobe Talbot. Strobe Talbot, brother-in-law, Cody Shearer. Strobe Talbot was Bill Clinton's Deputy Secretary of State. Cody Shearer and Sid Blumenthal, BFFs. Osprey, Global Services, a paramilitary company, making money off the war in Libya. You have got Clinton involved in Benghazi. You've got Victoria Nuland covering up for Benghazi, for the what happened there by writing the talking points. You see how all of this connects together? Oh, and by the way, Obama was complicit in all of this, as was Clapper, the intelligence community. That's just, folks, that's just the start. That's just the beginning of what, that's just the first couple of pages of my research, using a number of sources as well. But that's just the beginning. And it gets worse from here. Quickly, because I know I only have a few minutes left. Back in 2015, there was a report on by ProPublica writing about private emails that they reveal ex-Clinton aide's secret spy network. I'll put this link in the program description so you can read this, but pay specific attention to the involvement, of course, of Blumenthal in this with and Shearer and the General and Grange, David L. Grange, a Major General in the Army who ran a secret Pentagon special operations unit before retiring in 1999. Grange, he was the guy who founded Osprey Global Solutions, a consulting firm and government contractor involved heavily in the, shall we say, the Middle East, including but not limited to North Africa and Libya. Okay. Enter, again, Blumenthal. The emails released. Look at the emails and look at Hillary Clinton's relationship with Blumenthal. You're going to be hearing more about this. This is basically part one of a multi-part expose. This is deep, but this is the exposing the third way, this Marxist ideology propelling the coup, the attempted coup of our nation. And this has got the fingerprints of not just Obama, or not just Hillary Clinton, but Obama. Even though there's animus between the two, as I mentioned yesterday, consider the fact that Hillary Clinton and Blumenthal, two actors, two perpetrators in a attempted coup against Donald Trump. You've got the background of Blumenthal, extensive, running through that Marxist philosophy that no one is talking about, and it's important to connect the dots, even into the current Department of State today. Remember the names and understand how far back this goes. You'll know how deeply rooted this rot is, the infestation inside the United States apparatus.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.